Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, February 16th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Sheriffs Opt to Stay the Course, Immigration Duties Not Added to Workload, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. McLean County Sheriff John Sandage has no plans to add federal immigration duties to his deputy's workload. A call from President Donald Trump for federal agents to get tougher on immigration violators by enlisting the help of local enforcement officers has received mixed reviews from sheriffs across the country. The cooperation under Trump's January 25th executive order requires a specific agreement under the 1996 Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act. Currently, no jurisdictions in Illinois have such agreements with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And several area sheriffs said their work in managing jail facilities leaves them little time to become involved in ICE activities. Sandage says he continues to follow federal policies in place since 2014 that require county jails to submit fingerprints to the FBI when a person is booked into the jail. In some cases, ICE will ask counties to notify the agency when a suspect is released, said Sandage. The 2014 guidelines narrowed the circumstances under which federal officials would issue a detainer for an individual. Priority is given to illegal immigrants who are suspected of terrorism or convicted of serious felonies. Those caught attempting to enter the U.S. illegally also are priority cases for deportation. Those standards replaced others under Secure Communities, a controversial ICE program that resulted in large numbers of detainers being issued for people held on a much broader range of criminal and traffic charges. Despite protests from advocates for illegal immigrants who called for a change in jail policy, former Sheriff Mike Emery insisted that McLean County follow the Secure Communities protocol that required ICE to be notified when any person born outside the U.S. was booked into the jail. Under the guidelines, ICE had 48 hours, excluding holidays and weekends, to pick up a person held on a detainer. The revised rules include a shorter deadline for pickup by including holidays and weekends in the 48-hour period, and the issuance of warrants in some cases that state the specific reason a person is being detained by ICE, said Sandage. The use of local officers to enforce immigration laws dilutes the relationship officers have with the immigrant community and reduces resources, he said. We don't have the manpower to be an immigration force, and I don't think that effort helps build public trust, said Sandage. A 4-year decline in detainer requests continued in 2016, with 28 issued for McLean County inmates, down from 122 issued in 2012. The level of contact counties have with ICE varies and is based on how sheriffs view their role in enforcing immigration rules. In Peoria County, immigration detainers have been rare since a 2011 decision to stop honoring ICE requests for nonviolent traffic offenses. Chief Deputy Joe Needham said the jail is for people awaiting trial or serving a sentence, and not because you are an illegal immigrant. We have enough to do. But in Livingston County, two deputies received training and became sworn federal agents under an informal agreement with the Department of Homeland Security, the agency that includes ICE, said Sheriff Tony Childress. With Interstate 55 running through our county, we never know what we'll come across. This allows us to work with Homeland Security on highway interdiction stops for possible trafficking of drugs and illegal immigrants, said Childress. Recently, the ICE office in Chicago asked Childress's department to submit a weekly list of inmates held at the jail who are not U.S. citizens, he said. In DeWitt County, where most of the jail's population is housed in neighboring Piatt County under a cost-saving measure adopted last year, Sheriff Jared Schoffner said the jail's immigration policy has not changed since the January 25th executive order. Barring a request from ICE, the county does not become involved in immigration-related issues. There's been no change from our perspective. If there's a change in policy, we need something from the court system or the Attorney General's office, said Schoffner. Fred Sow, senior policy counsel for the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, said it makes sense for communities to cooperate with federal agents to prevent crime, but expanding enforcement to local agencies could be harmful in the long term. The use of county officers as ICE agents is the fastest way to kill any relationship a sheriff may want to have with immigrants in a community, said Sow. Census data shows about 1.8 million of Illinois' almost 13 million residents are foreign-born. About 450,000 people are living in the state illegally, according to the Pew Research Center. The next story is entitled, Flint Doctor, Raise Voice Over Injustice. Whistleblower for Water Crisis speaks at IWU Founders Day. By Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. The pediatrician who sounded the alarm about the Flint water crisis issued a challenge at Illinois Wesleyan University to speak out against injustices and to fight for the American dream. I challenge you to be unreasonable, Dr. Mona Hannah Adisha said during her IWU Founders Day address. I challenge you to raise your voice loud when others urge you to be quiet. Hannah Adisha initially came under fire from public officials when she called a news conference in 2015 to report that lead levels in the blood of Flint, Michigan children had doubled after the financially strapped city switched its water supply to the Flint River. Her findings were confirmed a little more than a week later. Every single number in my research was not a statistic. It was a kid, said Hannah Adisha, director for Pediatric Residency Program at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint. It's hard to raise your voice. It's scary, she told the packed house at Westbrook Auditorium in Presser Hall. Do not fear being the dissenter. Whether you are fighting big or small injustices, raise your voice. Introducing Hannah Adisha, IWU Provost Jonathan Green said, her courage and perseverance brought change by speaking for those without a voice. Chaplain Elise Nelson Winger said the efforts of Hannah Adisha reminds us of our mission to battle the persistent inequalities of our day. The Flint River water was not treated to prevent corrosion, which resulted in corroding pipes leaching lead into the water. Lead is a powerful neurotoxin that causes behavioral and developmental problems with multi-generational consequences, Hannah Adisha explained. The problem isn't limited to Flint. Aging infrastructure in other locations also is resulting in lead getting into water, often in poor communities or lower-income areas without adequate resources to replace plumbing containing lead. There are towns like Flint everywhere, she said, referring not only to its lead problems, but also to other environmental problems that disproportionately affect poor areas and to economic problems triggered by the departure of manufacturing and other well-paying jobs. There are Flints everywhere. There are injustices everywhere, said Hannah Adisha. She said, this is a risky time in the United States when the credibility of science is under attack, from climate change to vaccines. Hannah Adisha also expressed concern that what's left of the American dream will be at risk unless people speak up against injustices and work to bring back living wage jobs. Her family immigrated from Iraq to the United States when she was 4. Her mother taught English to immigrants. Her father worked as an engineer for General Motors. The American dream became a reality, Hannah Adisha said, and she felt welcome and driven to a life of service. But now that dream is threatened for many, she said. People are still running to America. They are trying to run to America, said Hannah Adisha. It is important, she said, to rebuild the American dream. Quoting from Martin Luther King, Jr., who twice spoke at IWU, Hannah Adisha said, We may have all come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now. The next story is entitled, Normal Bars Video Gaming Near Homes. Council Alters Liquor Code, Limits Areas of Gambling Machines. By Derek Bay. Normal. Normal residents can rest assured that no video gaming establishment will open near their homes. No business with video gaming, electronic gambling machines, can open within 200 feet of a residential neighborhood under liquor code changes approved by the Normal City Council. Businesses near residential areas that already have licenses for video gaming are not affected by the change. This was first raised by an application for a gaming establishment on West College Avenue. There's a little strip shopping center out there behind Carl's Ice Cream, and it's right next door to single-family homes, said Normal City Manager Mark Peterson. Some of the neighbors made comments to the council they felt it was inappropriate to have a gaming establishment in their neighborhood. I think it's a reasonable buffer. Council Member R.C. McBride said of the issue, It's been difficult to wrap our arms around it. Video gaming generates money for local governments in addition to providing entertainment. But opponents fear economic and social side effects of gambling, which can attract and disadvantage poor residents. We want to be friendly to business, but also certainly keep in mind the needs of homeowners and other residents, McBride said of the new guidelines. Normal has a dozen establishments with video gaming, according to an Illinois Gaming Board report for the month of December. The council also has approved more specific guidelines for restaurants and eliminated regulations over some events at Illinois State University and Heartland Community College. The restaurant definition has been kind of an ongoing challenge for staff because obviously in our liquor rules, in order to have a full liquor license, you have to be a restaurant. But the definition has never been codified, Peterson said. They're really looking for establishments that have a more comprehensive cooking capability. Here's an article headlined, Interim Health Director Named, by Paul Sweech. Bloomington. The longtime assistant administrator of the McLean County Health Department has been named interim director as the County Board of Health searches for a long-term replacement for Director Walt Howe. Kathy Coverston Anderson, a health department employee since September 1988 and assistant administrator since May 2009, was announced to health department staff as interim director on Wednesday morning by Board of Health President Judy Buchanan. Buchanan said the Board of Health had confidence in Coverston Anderson to lead the department. Kathy's knowledge and experience in the field of public health, together with her work with the department, will allow her to assume key administrative responsibilities during the interim, Buchanan said. Coverston Anderson, 59, of Bloomington, will become interim director on February 25th. I am honored to be named interim administrator for the health department and thank the Board of Health for giving me the opportunity to serve the residents of McLean County in this way, said Coverston Anderson. Howe's last day with the health department will be February 24th. Howe, 60, said on February 6th that he is retiring and has accepted the new position of manager of preventive health services at the Illinois Public Health Association, a statewide advocate for public health. Howe has worked in public health for 38 years, has been with the County Health Department since 1991, and has been director since 2009. Culverson Anderson thanked Howe for leading the department through budget crises, pandemics, collaborations, and many other ventures in his 8 years in the administrator's role. Buchanan also announced that 4 Board of Health members, herself, Corey Tello, John Zunick, and Dr. Allen Ginsberg, will make up the committee that will conduct a national search for a new director. "We anticipate 6 to 8 months for the search," said Health Department spokeswoman Lisa Slater. Culverson Anderson's current salary is $80,265. It will increase to $88,291.50 during her time as interim director, Slater said. The Health Department has 90 full and part-time employees and an $8.4 million budget. Responsibilities include restaurant inspections, communicable disease control, and WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, Nutritional, Educational, and Supplemental Food Program. The next story is entitled, "Why WCA Leaders Call for Budget Action. Group Seeks Support from Local Legislators," by Paul Sweech. Bloomington. Illinoisans deserve a fair budget, representatives of YWCA McLean County and several Central Illinois legislators agreed Wednesday. How to achieve that remains the subject of debate. About 25 YWCA employees, board members, volunteers, and allies traveled to Springfield on Wednesday for the governor's budget address and to buttonhole legislators. "We wanted to speak to our legislators to let them know how their inaction affects people in their district and to get assurances that they will pass a fair and compassionate budget," said YWCA Mission Impact Director Jen Carrillo. The group had brief exchanges with State Senator Jason Barrickman, Republican of Bloomington, State Senator Bill Brady, Republican of Bloomington, and State Representative Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington, as they were walking to the House chambers to hear the governor's address. "They said they heard us, but they did not inspire us in a way that would ensure us that they would do the right thing," Carrillo told the Pantograph after the budget address. The legislators disagreed. "Their voices were heard," Dan Brady told the Pantograph. "I listened." But Brady said trying to address issues in a hallway right before the governor's address can be counterproductive, and said his door was open to meet with the group in Bloomington Normal. "I'm sorry they felt that way," Bill Brady said. "I appreciate them coming down. I certainly heard what they had to say. The right thing to do at the moment is to negotiate with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle," Barrickman said. "We've been working on that for weeks. It's important to get it right." The group called out to Governor Bruce Rauner as he was walking to the chambers. "We told him we deserve a fair and compassionate budget that is not balanced on the backs of poor people," Carrillo said. "Inaction is unacceptable." They are absolutely right. That's why we in the Senate are working so hard on the grand bargain, Bill Brady said, referring to the legislative compromise at work in the Senate. Carrillo said, "We want our legislators to know that people are hurting in their district and people will hold them accountable." YWCA previously reported that it has eliminated 5 positions and not filled 4 vacancies because of delayed state payments due to the state budget impasse. Carrillo said the group wants the state to raise revenue by closing corporate tax loopholes and having top income earners pay higher taxes. "We all want a fair, balanced, and compassionate budget," Dan Brady said. "We have competing interests in the state. The needs outweigh the means to fund those services. We must prioritize. We can't be everything to all people." "We need a real balanced budget," Barrickman said. "I don't think we're there yet, but I'm hopeful." And here is a related story headlined, "Rauner offers tax hike advice, to end stalemate. Democrats deride governor's latest plan, cite revenue shortfall. By John O'Connor. Springfield. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner gave more specifics Wednesday on what tax hikes he'd accept to end Illinois' nearly two-year budget stalemate, enduring derisive laughter from Democratic legislators who shelved his first two spending plans. Rauner told the General Assembly during an afternoon budget address that spending cuts need to be real, no smoke and mirrors, and insisted his plan would balance the budget. However, as it stands, it would leave a $7 billion hole without matching revenue. If enacted as introduced Wednesday, the state would spend nearly $40 billion, 22% more than the $33 billion in revenue the plan counts on, according to budget documents released after the speech. Sidestepping specifics, Rauner used his third budget presentation to signal his willingness to accept tax increases. He struck an upbeat tone, praising real progress the Senate had made in negotiating a compromise plan. It addresses regulatory changes Rauner has demanded for 2 years, but also an income tax increase to slice into a multi-billion dollar deficit. Skittish lawmakers staring down a Senate tax vote had urged the governor to weigh in. Rauner said that, as a guideline, he's open to a tax on services, such as car repairs or haircuts, but would nix increased taxes on food, medicine, or retirement income. There is no one single bullet, no one single must-have for our administration, Rauner said. But for the future of our state, change must be real, not just a newspaper headline. But Democrats who hold majorities in both the House and Senate were unimpressed. There was no real meat in what he was saying today, complained Representative Greg Harris, a Chicago Democrat and House budget negotiator. We heard he plans to spend much more money. Illinois has been without a budget since July 2015, 2 months after Rauner took office, the nation's longest state budget stalemate in nearly a century. Recalling the length of the stalemate, rife with accusations on both sides, Rauner said, "This isn't about pointing fingers or assigning blame." That prompted a round of laughter from Democrats in the chamber. Rauner has insisted that a budget agreement include regulatory and political changes, such as cost-cutting restrictions on workers' compensation and term limits for office holders. The Senate plan includes some of his priorities, but also an increase in the personal income tax rate to 4.99% from 3.75%. He said he wants a permanent property tax freeze, not one limited to 2 years, as the Senate suggests. He said that's only fair if lawmakers approve a permanent increase in the personal income tax rate from 3.75% to 4.99%. Even without an annual spending plan, state government continues to operate largely because of court orders and intermittent appropriations by lawmakers. But the picture is bleak. Without action, Illinois will have a $5.3 billion deficit when the current fiscal year ends June 30th. There is a backlog of $11 billion in overdue bills. State pension programs are $130 billion short of what they need to pay promised benefits to retired and current employees. Rauner proposes spending of $37.3 billion, but only after saving $2.5 billion with changes to state employee health insurance, selling the James R. Thompson State Office Building in Chicago, making procurement more efficient, and other changes, most of which require legislative approval. And if he achieves those cuts, there's still a hole of $4.6 billion. Budget Director Scott Harry says the governor hopes that will be covered, with help from the legislature, by economic growth, more spending cuts, and tax increases that come out of the Senate compromise. The final result must be a good deal for taxpayers and job creators. A grand bargain that truly balances the budget once and for all and really moves the needle when it comes to job creation, Rauner said. And here's a story entitled, Man Wanted for Iowa Attempted Murder Arrested in Bloomington, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. An Iowa man facing attempted murder charges in Iowa City has been taken into custody in Bloomington, police said. Darius Davison, 20, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, was arrested around 2:15 p.m. Tuesday by members of the U.S. Marshals Task Force and Bloomington Police Department's Street Crimes Unit in the 1900 block of Tracy Drive. He is being held at the McLean County Jail, awaiting extradition. Police in Iowa City responded to a report of shots fired and a man on the ground around 5:30 p.m. on February 6th. A witness told police the suspect had a handgun and fired at least four rounds, striking the victim, according to a news release from the Iowa City Police Department. Police there determined Davison and the victim were involved in a property dispute. On February 8th, officers issued an arrest warrant for Davison. Police did not release the connection between Davison and him being in Bloomington. The person who was shot remains in stable condition after being taken to University of Iowa hospitals, authorities said. Here are some items from today's area calendar. Chili Supper, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Thursday, Blue Ridge High School, Farmer City. Benefits Service Projects for the Community. Sponsors, BRHA's Klee Club and Kiwanis Club of FC. $3 to $5. Another item is Essentials of Business with SCORE. 6:30 p.m. Thursday, Bloomington Public Library Community Room. Topic, Exporting, by Jim Ryan. And here's another item. League of Women Voters of McLean County, WGLT Candidate Forum. 6 p.m. Thursday, ISU University Galleries, Bloomington Mayoral Candidates. And one more item for today. Poetry is Normal, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. Thursday, Normal Public Library. Third Thursday of every other month for adults and seniors. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for February 16th. Please stay tuned.